if you were going to go into a battle, a war, or just a little skirmish, you likely would be interested in knowing who your opponent was. After all, you would not want to use your energy and resources fighting somebody who was not against you. And neither would you want to use your resources in an ineffective way in trying to achieve your desired outcome. We understand this, and colloquially we speak of bringing a water gun to a gunfight, or we might talk about being able to take on a battle of the wits with only half of our mind, or fight somebody with one arm tied behind our back. We simply are indicating that we believe that there are times when you need to understand what you need for where you're going. In light of the situation that Paul and his missionary companions had experienced at the church at Thessalonica, the reason that this cohort of men had to leave the city and the small foundling church, Paul begins this letter and he identifies for them the gospel. He identifies their work to promote the gospel in their city. And then Paul decides that he needs to identify the enemy. Well, possibly because some of their opponents had been claiming that Paul and his cohort were simply there to try to swindle something out of the people of Thessalonica, and when it didn't work, they ran. Possibly there were some people within the church who were maligning Paul. But whatever the case, whatever the nature of the exact problems that Paul was speaking of, Paul decided that he needed to make it clear to the church at Thessalonica who the enemy was and why it mattered for the church in Thessalonica, and I will argue why it matters for us. And to see what Paul writes, we're going to be in 1 Thessalonians chapter 17, or chapter 2. We're going to begin at verse 17 this morning. And I'm going to read from a translation I normally don't use. It is the newest. I mean, I normally use the New American Standard Bible, but this time I chose to use their newest version. Because honestly, if you listen, if you're following along with another translation, you'll notice that there is a word that you don't see in your translation. And this is what Paul writes. He says, "But we brothers and sisters," and that's not the word I'm talking about. just so you understand, they have, at places where it's appropriate, added what we as ministers normally do anyway, brothers and sisters, "having been orphaned from you by absence for a short while, in person, not in spirit, we're all the more eager with great desire to see you face to face. For we wanted to come to you, I, Paul, more than once, and Satan hindered us. For who is our hope, our joy, our crown of pride in the presence of our Lord Jesus at his coming? Or is it not indeed you? For you are our glory and our joy." And so I just want us to examine this morning who the enemy is, so that we understand why we need to be in battle, and we understand how to be successful in that battle. It begins with Paul explaining why he left. And in doing so, he's stating the fact that they are not the enemy. Why they left. And so Paul goes back to the situation that had transpired some months earlier. Luke gives us the travelogue of Paul and his companions, doesn't give us a clear indication exactly how long it was between the time at Thessalonica and the time that Paul would have been writing this letter. But what we know is that it had been a couple months, several months, but probably not more than a year. Probably hadn't even reached to a year. And so the church at Thessalonica was familiar. Even if there had been some new members that had come into the church at Thessalonica after Paul had left, they were still familiar with the things that transpired and the things that took place that caused Paul and his companions to leave the city of Thessalonica. And they would have heard about the uprising. And maybe some of them, because of the uprising, because of the way that Christians, young Christians at the church at Thessalonica handled themselves. People came into the church. But Paul says to them, he looks at them and he says, you know the situation, and we were orphaned from you. We were orphaned from you. Now, that's a word that carries a lot of emotional weight. We read that we were torn away from you, or we were forced to leave, or there are different translations of that word in the different translations. But the word means orphaned. And you think about the reason you would say somebody was orphaned. They were torn away from their family. Some of them would have been torn away by death. The death of their parents. And so they were torn away. Some of them might have been orphaned by other extremes. They were sold into slavery and torn away from their parents. And Paul looks, and it isn't just a, we left you for a while. It was, we're torn away for life. Orphaned means that there is no hope of reunion. Although Paul does seem to think that there is a hope that there will be a reunion, but he uses this word that is so full of emotion. It's so full of emotional meaning because he wants the people to understand that it was not by any means, any stretch of their imagination, Paul or Silas or Timothy's desire that they would leave immediately from Thessalonica. If Paul and Silas and Timothy had been a lot like the traveling philosophers of their day, they might have stayed for a while and tried to get a following, and things got tough, the tough get going. Things get tough in the city of Thessalonica, and the philosopher simply would have up and left. And Paul is saying to the church at Thessalonica, you understand, we did not leave you by choice. In fact, we didn't want to leave you by choice, but some of the members of the, if you go back to Acts, some of the members of the church wouldn't let Paul go defend himself. Probably a good thing, but they wouldn't let Paul go defend himself. And so Paul and the church at Thessalonica were separated. In fact, last week we looked at the fact that he said that it was by your own brethren. And so while there may have been some Jews that had been involved, Paul begins to understand and see that it was the Gentile nature of the city of Thessalonica that caused them to leave. But Paul goes on, he says, you know, we left, but we desired to return. We are not the enemy. Because, to be honest, we wanted to come back. And I have tried on several occasions to make the arrangements, to make the plans, so that we could return to the city of Thessalonica. So that we could come back to you as a group of brothers, and we could gather together, and I could continue to help you to grow in the faith. And I've made plans, and he says, not just once, but at least twice. Time and again. And the indication isn't necessarily that Paul tried twice and he stopped. It was kind of like, you know, we tried more than once. Well, how many is that? Well, that's more than two. You know, we tried at least twice, maybe three, four, five. Paul may have tried every day since they were forced out of Thessalonica to find a way to get back to the church at Thessalonica. And he's saying that we have made the plans. We have done what we can, but we haven't been able to make it back. We desired to come to you and to encourage you and to strengthen you and to train you and to teach you more and more about this relationship with Jesus Christ. He says, but we couldn't return. And so then he moves and he says, we are not the enemy. And he says, this is why we could not return. And he identifies the enemy. Paul identifies the opposition for the people of the church at Thessalonica. And he begins, and if you go back, you can read, he begins and he says that the opposition looks like it came from the people of Thessalonica. You know how the Jews riled up some of the Gentiles, and the Gentiles got all heated and got all emotional, and in their fervor, they all came together, and somebody grabbed Jason, and they drug him into the proceedings, and you know how that went. And if you looked at the situation, Paul says, you would identify the enemy, but you'd be wrong. You'd look at the situation and you would look at the authorities, the people that are in charge in the city of Thessalonica, and they would look a lot like the enemy. And Paul is probably speaking because probably part of what is keeping Paul and his companions from returning to the city of Thessalonica is the fact that Jason was required to put down this payment, this deposit, to say, we won't cause any more problems. Jason wasn't the one that causes the problems. We see that if you look at the story, but Jason is the one who is required to put down this pledge to say, you know what, we will try to get along. We won't cause any more problems. And so, to the Thessalonians, the authorities might have looked like the enemy. Or then they might have been looking at the fact that it looks like the Jews are the one who stirred up the problem. They're the ones who got things rolling and got everybody kind of in this excited, exuberant, let's get rid of these guys attitude. And so the church at Thessalonica might have been looking, and they would have identified the enemy, and they would have said, well, the enemy is the Jews. It's the synagogue down the street. Which, for some of them, that would have been kind of difficult because those might have been their brothers and their cousins and their fathers. But they could have looked and they could have said, we identify the enemy. And it's the Jews over there. But what Paul is saying is that they are not the real enemy. And we look at the landscape around us, and we might look at certain politicians and say, that's the enemy to our faith. That's the enemy to us being able to worship the way we think. Or they may be the enemy to what we believe God's will would be. And Paul would look at us and he'd say, yet they're not the enemy. See, we see people, we see the face of people, and it becomes easy to believe that they are the enemy of the gospel. But what Paul is going to say is, no, they are not the enemy. In fact, Paul names the enemy. He says it's Satan. We've tried to come to see you more than once, but Satan opposed us. Satan opposed us. You see, Paul is looking at the situation, and Paul realizes that there is a very real spiritual battle that is taking place. Paul realizes that there is a battle that's taking place for the hearts and the minds of people in Thessalonica. Paul looked at them and he could see that there was a spiritual battle that was taking place for the hearts and minds of the people at Berea, at Athens, at Philippi, at Corinth, at Jerusalem. And if Paul was writing today, he would be able to look and he would be able to say that there is a very, very real spiritual battle taking place for the people in Illinois, the people in the United States, the people all around the world. There is a very real spiritual battle that is taking place, and Paul realized that he as a minister of the gospel, was involved. I like what one commentator says. He said this. He says, Paul communicates several important theological points in one statement. First, Satan is a foe whose presence is immediately palpable, not simply an abstract principle of evil. Second, he is able to impede such key apostles as Paul and Silas. Third, Satan's hindrance continues despite the many prayers to God for relief. Fourth, Paul and his team continue to pray for the satanic barrier to be eliminated, even though it has not thus far, or lifted thus far. Their battle with Satan required vigilance. Fifth, Paul is not reticent about admitting that he, an apostle, has been successfully held up by Satan. Something similar appears in Paul's writing to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 12:7. Where the thorn in my flesh is an enemy messenger of Satan to torment me. His spiritual modesty is a rebuke to those leaders who, though or through the centuries, have dared to imply that Satan is their trained poodle. Satan is a very real enemy. He's not somebody that we can look at like the popular caricatures of him with a red union suit on and horns and a pitchfork. Satan is a very real enemy. And he is going around causing problems for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so Paul notes that the spiritual battle is everywhere, and elsewhere he notices the same thing in Ephesians chapter 6. You're familiar with it, but Ephesians 6, 12, he says, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." And he goes on and he tells us to take up the spiritual armor. Because the battle is real. The enemy is present. And he is around us. And he is working against the gospel of Jesus Christ. Or again, Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. in verses 3 and 4. He says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not wage battle according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses." And Paul identifies later what those fortresses or what those areas that we do battle with are. But he's saying to us that there is a spiritual battle. He's looking at the church at Thessalonica and he's saying, you may look out and you may see people, flesh and blood people, face to face, and they may be causing problems, but they are not the enemy. And in fact, if you want to understand, Paul is being effective. We might say it this way, that Paul is taking territory from the enemy for the kingdom of God. And Satan is doing his best to deter or halt the work of God through Paul. You see, if you go back and you look at what Luke writes about Paul's ministry, you see that Paul is being effective in taking territory for the kingdom of God. You go back to Philippi. What was the problem that Paul faced in Philippi? Well, there was a young slave girl who had a spirit that was allowing her to tell fortunes, and Paul cast the demon out. And Satan lost one soul. Paul was winning a battle. You go to the church at Thessalonica, it says, Luke says in Acts chapter 17, 4, that there were some Jews, some God-fearers, and some leading women in Thessalonica who were following Paul and who had begun to follow Jesus Christ. And Satan is losing ground. You go on, you follow him farther, you come to Athens. Before Paul writes to the church at Thessalonica, he makes one stop in Athens, and in 17:34 it talks about those who believed what Paul had to say. From the city of Athens, where lots of things were told and lots of philosophers came through and talked about the right way to live, and there were some who said, you know what? The gods of the Greeks and the gods of the Romans aren't right. The philosophers aren't right. But Paul is bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so Satan is at work. And Jesus tells about this. And if you were to go back and study the gospels and study some other things, you'll find that Satan is known to retake people who believed. At least people who initially accepted that the gospel was true. You know, you go to the parable of the sower in Matthew chapter 13. And Jesus says that there are some people who hear the gospel and they are excited. But Satan takes that away. Or you go to just a few verses later and Jesus tells a second parable. And it's a parable about a sower and the weeds and the tares. And Jesus says that there will be some who are planted among even the believers who look like they're followers of Jesus Christ. Satan is busy. Satan is at work. And in fact, you look at the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter 12 tells the story of Jesus from his birth to his death, his resurrection, his ascension. And in Revelation 12, 17, it says the beast, the serpent, goes out and makes war with the children, the church. Satan is busy doing war against the church. And the more that the church is effective, the more that Satan does battle. And that brings us to the third thing that Paul wants the church at Thessalonica to understand. And that is why it matters. Why does it matter that Paul is not the enemy and that Satan is? Why is it important that we properly identify the enemy? And Paul says that it is because of the salvation of the Thessalonian believers. It is because he wants them to be his pride and joy when Jesus returns. Not because Paul is looking for accolades, not because Paul is trying to bolster his reputation, not because Paul has the proverbial gospel gun and he wants to put a few more notches on the handle, you know, the old Western movies. Paul isn't into any of that. Paul isn't saying that somehow he's going to be more well-respected in heaven if the Thessalonian believers continue to believe. Rather, what he's saying is that we will be proud, we will be happy, we will be... Well, I remember back when my mom was teaching. You know, and I've seen it from other teachers over the years, those students who come back after 10 years, you know, you've got these little first and second graders that my mom taught. They come back after 10 years when they're about ready to graduate, and they simply say, "Thank you. We appreciate what you did. We acknowledge," you know, and Paul isn't saying, you know, it's the accolades themselves, but, you know, mom was always thankful that they came back, but she was impressed by where they had gone. And what they had accomplished. And what they were going to accomplish. And Paul is saying, he says, "I'm thankful. You are our pride and joy because we have built into you, we have encouraged you. And when we see you cross the finish line, there is a sense of joy. There is a sense that yes, they've made it." And Paul is saying to the church at Thessalonica, you have to understand that there is a spiritual battle taking place so that, one, you're prepared so that you can employ the proper resources so that you can finish. And they don't get duped, but they finish. I like what Paul says to the church at Corinth, 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Beginning with verse 13, warning the church there, he says, "For such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. No wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be according to their deeds." Paul says we need to identify what is right. We need to identify the enemy because the enemy is trying to impersonate the truth. Trying to impersonate and trying to deceive people. And in fact, in a few weeks, we're going to come back to this. And when we get to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, we're going to see the same thing about the false teachers trying to deceive. And Paul wants them to be aware of what's taking place because persecution is one of Satan's means of keeping people from the faith or diverting people from the faith later. That's what 1 Peter says, what Peter says to the church. He says, "Be of sober spirit. Be on alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. So resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brothers and sisters who are in the world." In other words, Satan isn't just after the church at Thessalonica. He isn't just after the church in one location. Satan is at work around the world through his little minions trying to destroy the work of the church. And if he can't destroy the work of the church, he will He will pull off the weak ones. You know, lions never go after the healthy. They attack some large animals, but they never go after the healthy. They go after the young that still haven't quite got their legs. They go after the diseased that can't keep up with whatever herd it is they're chasing. They go after the lame that can't make it on their own. And Satan is looking. And he's trying to find those who he can devour. And Paul says that we have to pay attention. That our enemy, he sometimes will try to deceive us from believing the truth. And if that doesn't work, well, then he'll try persecution. And Paul says that there can be success in ministry despite the opposition and setback. He's looking at the church at Thessalonica and he says, you know, we have been removed from you. We have been orphaned from you, but you can still be successful. You can still make it to the finish line. And Paul says that their pride and joy, those that have been won to Jesus Christ are their pride and joy. But he can only say that because of the fact that Jesus is going to return. He warns us and tells us that he wants us to be faithful to the end. And he warns us and he tells us about the enemy that is very real because he says the end is coming. Jesus Christ is going to return. And as Jesus says about the servant, or says about the master talking to the servant in Matthew chapter 24, verses 45 through 51, Paul wants to be faithful. Paul wants to be the faithful servant who is found doing what his master told him to do in his absence. And Paul wants the church at Thessalonica to be like that wise servant who is doing what his master has requested when the master returns. And we need to be like that wise servant who is doing what Jesus asked us to do when Jesus returns. Paul wants the church at Thessalonica to properly identify the enemy because the battle is real. And at least Paul and Silas are in Satan's list of people to be taken down. While physical people might look like the enemy, the people that we see are not the enemy. They are the ones that Satan is using to oppose the message of Jesus Christ, the Savior. And thus, they are people in need of salvation. And seeing the battle in this light, and this is what Paul wants the church at Thessalonica to see. Seeing the battle in this light helps people to prepare to stand firm when they are faced with temptation, trial, and even persecution. It also helps us to understand that no matter who we encounter, they are either people in need of the message of the gospel for salvation, or they are people who might need to be reminded of the gospel so that they can remain faithful until the return of Jesus Christ. And so we need to be people who see and recognize that our enemy is Satan and his army of wicked minions. And the question this morning for us is, which camp are we in? Are we in the camp of the saved or the camp of those needing salvation?